Mr. Clark, very good to speak to you once again.
Thank you so much, Mr. Montgomery.
Mr. Clark, we are celebrating Black History Month in Canada. What does that mean for you?
An opportunity for all of us to think about the tremendous contributions that people of African heritage have given to Canada, made to Canada, over centuries.
The talk that you're giving tonight as a lecturer pulls apart the Great Black North in Canada and Sweden. It argues that northern geography is for whites, and when you see blacks, they're kind of out of place here. But of course, African Canadians have been in this country since before Canada was a country. So why are we still of this impression that they're out of place?
Because I think it's been a very powerful propaganda that's been perpetrated for centuries now, going back to the Renaissance era and the era of discovery and conquest and imperialism, et cetera, and enslavement, of course. This notion that people from the southern portions of the globe, and specifically Africans, were somehow unsuited for existence in northern climates. And this idea has held sway for so long that it's still embedded in our sensibilities in lots of subtle ways, including this continuous notion that somehow black people cannot cope with the cold, et cetera, et cetera. And also the idea, associate idea, that the whiteness of winter, the ice and snow and coldness and hardiness required to put up with it all, et cetera, et cetera. These are virtues that may be associated with whiteness, with people of Caucasian physiognomies, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a very powerful set of images that we've fallen prey to for the last several hundred years. And yet, this image pattern is completely false. For one thing, the idea that whites are somehow better able to withstand the cold and better able to deal with winter, I think is disproven by the fact that so many Canadians of Caucasian background love to winter in Florida, love to jet off to Cuba, et cetera, and like most of us, I would say, unless, of course, we're given to winter sports, like to see an early spring and don't really like to think about having to potentially slip and fall on black ice somewhere. So
I think your point is well taken when you consider the fact that we've enjoyed a lot of Arctic weather in this country, certainly in the eastern and central parts of this country this winter. And there's been a lot of Caucasian Canadians complaining that it's been too cold and probably wouldn't survive without many layers of coats and boots and gloves and hats and so on.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And then we need to think about the fact that one of the early explorers who many historians thought had discovered the North Pole or contributed to discovering the North Pole back in 1909 was, in fact, African-American, Matthew Henson, who accompanied Robert Peary to the Pole, or what they thought was the Pole, in, again, 1909. So just one example. There were blacks who worked on the Alaska Highway, African-Americans, and, of course, black fur traders, many of whom actually came from Montreal back in the 18th century. And a local historian in the city, Frank Mackey, has discussed their biographies greatly in his latest book about blacks in Montreal. And, of course, these folks worked for the Hudson Bay Company, Northwest Company, and didn't seem to have any trouble whatsoever in carrying out the portages and doing the canoeing and dealing in the furs and forming families with Native women, et cetera, et cetera. So they lived the life of the North.
But Mr. Clark, let me ask you this then. Why is your talk about Canada and Sweden? Why those two countries and not other countries, Norway, Finland, and so on, and Denmark?
Well, actually,
and
thank you so much for the question. I do touch on Finland. The reason is this. Because this idea of the North not being a place that black people should be expected to be able to inhabit is an idea that was shared and propagated partly by a Swedish scientist, Linnaeus, who we might all know as someone who helped to categorize plants, a great botanist, et cetera, et cetera. But he also tried to categorize human beings in terms of racial classifications. And Linnaeus and other Swedish scientists from the 17th century, 18th century, did a lot to propagate these notions that certain people belong in certain parts of the world and only could be in those parts of the world and not anywhere else easily. And the results of that kind of thinking are also clear in Sweden today. I made a visit to Stockholm in October and met Afro-Swedes and looked at some of their literature and discovered or found that their situation is very much similar to that of African Canadians, and for similar reasons. The idea that white Swedes have, that black Swedes just don't belong.
Well, I'm wondering then if that's the case, that some people say that, well, blacks are kind of out of place in northern climes, there doesn't seem to be an equivalent that whites might be out of place, say, in Africa at all.
Well, yes and no. See, it's very interesting because all this propaganda always is contradictory. It always is. And this is a good example, your comment, because of the fact that folks like Rousseau, for instance, the French philosopher, 18th century, argued that white French men could go anywhere. They could go to the deserts, they could go to the Arctic, and they would thrive. It didn't matter. Climate didn't mean anything to them. They could go anywhere and succeed.
So a superiority of the white race kind of thing.
Exactly. And at the same time, Rousseau made the point, that Inuit people could only be in the Arctic and Africans could only be in Africa and survive. They could not go anywhere else. But the French or Europeans or Caucasians, by extension, were fit people, superior people, could go anywhere on the planet. On the other hand, there's a countervailing tradition as well in European letters, which is to suggest that the South is a place of disease, immorality, corruption, crookedness, and that if a good white northern European person or a person from Western Europe ends up in the South and stays there, then they are very likely going to become diseased and corrupted. And you see this, for instance, in Heart of Darkness, Conrad's novel. This is what happens with Kurtz. He starts off as somebody with great humanitarian, perhaps, ideas and so on, a kind of missionary approach to things. But he goes to the Congo. He's there too long. He begins to become corrupted and then becomes basically a murderer.
Well, Mr. Clark, in today's world, when we have the Internet, when we have so much international travel and immigration, is this concept not fading away, in your opinion?
No, I don't think it is. I think that, as a matter of fact, what I think we need to do as a nation and as journalists and as thinkers and artists is to make sure that we incorporate a lot more people of color, citizens of color, in our northern imagery, which still tends to emphasize whiteness as a given. And that's what it means to be in Canada. It's to be white. It's to be connected with snow. It's to be connected with hardiness and surviving the long, cold winters, the great white north ideal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I still think we need to do some work to overturn that idea by emphasizing the fact that persons of color have been in Canada for a very, very long time, have put up with, suffered through, survived the winters along with everybody else, as best they could. And so I think that a lot more work needs to be done to dethrone these notions of ready European adaptability and recognize the fact that many different kinds of human beings from different parts of the world have had to survive and build communities here one sort or another in the North as well as in the South, and to make sure that these histories and these images begin to be propagated along with the former imagery of Canada.
Well, Mr. Clark, it's very interesting, and I appreciate very much speaking to you, but I cannot let you go away without a poet of your stature giving us something to go off with. Do you have a poem for us?
Yes, sir. Well, Mr. Montgomery, this is a poem which is titled Daughter of Music, and it's written as a praise poem for black women. And so here it is, daughter of music, a style lights upon her, daughter of music, beauty defining living song, Negro, Creole, Criollo. Don't she feelingly compose sinuous woodwind, imperious brass, her voice coaxing, Zuwaka, cocoa smokiness, her eyes lilting gold, ochre, copper. Her form mimics fluid fire, sunlight breaking open, flaking upon water. Our African Atlantic, all salt water, toffee, and masala molasses. A style lights upon her, she who broke from barracoon, swam from barracuda, clambered over barricades. By stymieing whips as strident as surf, by shouting down yelping dog men, wishing her groaning in fields, moaning in bed, she canceled their coughful cacophony. Refusing her captor's music to escape, she licensed silence. Amid pining leaves and ganja jungles, she augurs joy, matrix of song.
George Eliot Clark, thank you for this.
Thank you so much.